Hey, welcome back everyone to where we play the greatest music of all time. This is part two of the classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio. Today we are celebrating International Guitar Month, even though it was last month, which features some of the greats that we grew up with.
Shh, keep it quiet, Jim.
Okay.
All right.
So who do we got up next? Oh, he's on my t-shirt here.
Yeah. For everyone who can't see this t-shirt, it's a pretty ugly t-shirt.
It is. Jim Eggers, can you put the camera on me? Thank you.
I like the guy on the shirt. The color, eh.
Yeah, it's the Second Winter album cover all over my shirt. I bought it online. I didn't realize it was going to be this ugly, but I thought this is the only place in the world I could wear it. So I wore it to the studio. And anyway, up next is a man I photographed several times in concert and got to know somewhat thanks to his manager, Mr. Paul Nelson. Like his brother, Edgar, Johnny Winter was born with this genetic condition known as albinism. But he turned his unusual physical features into an asset and became one of the greatest rock-era players of American rural and post-war blues.
You know, Johnny was only 12 when he watched a 1920s mob film. Hey, I know, you're Italian. I'm sorry.
Hey, what are you talking about? You talking to me?
It was a mob film.
What, I'm here to make you smile and make you laugh?
Jim, it featured blues music from the era. That's the most important.
Well, why'd
thing.
You bring up the Italian thing? You saying all Italians are in the mob?
I said mob.
Mob.
Mob, okay. I didn't say Italian.
That was a good group in Chicago, the mob.
Yeah, the
by
mob,
the way,
yeah.
Back in the 60s and 70s.
Well, at age 17, guess what he did? He snuck into a black music club and persuaded B.B. King to lend him his guitar and perform on the same stage. That took moxie.
Yeah.
In 1969, at the age of 25, he signed with Columbia Records for a sum of money that was groundbreaking at the time.
Yeah, it was a lot of money.
A lot of money.
I think it was the highest ever paid to somebody.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
And as Johnny Winter fans know, the man is one of the greatest slide guitar players there are. For decades, he used a sawed-off piece of plumber's pipe for his acoustic and electric slide playing. Very innovative. He's won multiple Grammy Awards, including a must-have album he played on and produced for the great Muddy Waters.
Yeah, and Jim, we could do an entire show on this man's career, but we have a song to play.
He truly is amazing. I saw him back in the 70s, and I saw him several times in the 2000s, and he still blew me away. We're going to play a rousing live version of the Chuck Berry song, Johnny Be Good. It was recorded at the Fillmore East in New York in 1970 and appears on the album, one of my favorites, Johnny Winter and Live. And I believe, wasn't Rick Derringer the other guitar player on it?
Yes, very good.
Thank you. It should be part of everyone's vinyl CD or at least their download collection. So let's rock, baby. Rock and roll with Johnny Winter.
Guitar just like a
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how it's done.
Yes. I don't think he needs guitar lessons, do you?
No. I gave him a couple when I met him, and he said, I already knew that.
Okay. Well, Jim, again, another guitarist that you photographed. He kept a low profile as a guitarist for the British prog band Procol Harum, but on a few occasions, they featured him on a song that revealed his full potential. After 5 years with Procol Harum, Robin Trower formed his first power trio, and a new guitar god was born.
Yeah, in its prime, the Robin Trower Band sold out arenas and stadiums worldwide, and Trower was spoken in the same breath as Jimi Hendrix. The similarities were in tone, phrasing, similar guitar pedals, and a preference for playing a Fender Stratocaster. And although Trower found the comparison flattering, he felt fans and music critics could not be on the Hendrix comparison.
Yeah,
I didn't see it. I thought they were completely different.
I did too. Yeah. He was a little miffed at that. But over his career, Trower has mixed soul, funk, blues, and rock to create a musical legacy all of his own and move beyond the Hendrix talk. He talked about his early playing as being unlistenable and far less emotive than his more recent approach. And I find it hard to believe. But tell this to his legion of fans, me included, to consider his 1972 masterpiece, Bridge of Sighs, as the perfect storm of a guitar album. So here is the album's title track, Bridge of Sighs.
Absolutely love the haunting tone of his guitar, and James Dewar's voice just really, really adds to the sound of Robin Trower Band. And I'll brag a little bit.
Go for it, man.
I will. When they reissue Twice Removed from Yesterday, they use some of my photos on the reissue, some stuff I took backstage and some live. So I feel a little kinship with Robin Trower, and I'm Facebook friends with Lisa Dewar, James's daughter, and Bill Lorden, the drummer. So I really feel something for anything Robin Trower does.
Yeah, if you got it, baby, flaunt it.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, you had mentioned the haunting tone of his guitar. For those into gear, the primary reason that guitar sounded similar to Hendrix was the use of a device called the Univibe, which I think is a flanging or a phase shifter type device that gave Trower that similar sound to Hendrix. So a little bit of tech talk there. Well, our next featured guitarist is the only man B.B. King said made him sweat. And King, of course, was referring to the playing of guitarist Peter Greenbaum, who is better known as Peter Green. He is the founder and primary force of Fleetwood Mac.
Love Peter Green. And let's make this clear. This is not a hugely successful 1970s pop version of Fleetwood Mac that features Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham, but the Fleetwood Mac that took Great Britain by storm in the mid to late 60s. That band included Peter Green, drummer Mick Fleetwood, bassist John McVie, keyboardist Christine Perfect, who wound up marrying John McVie, and guitarist Jeremy Spencer and Danny Kirwan.
That's all true, Jim. And the Fleetwood Mac that you're talking about was a blues rock powerhouse. If you can get your hands on any of their live bootlegs, you'll discover just how good they were in front of a live audience. Unlike many of Peter Green's peers, he opted for a cleaner guitar sound that featured expressive and passionate phrasing and a very biting sweet tone on his Gibson guitar. And he had the voice to match. Unfortunately, the ups and downs of Peter's life is well documented, but his recorded catalog leaves no doubt as to his place in guitar history.
Yeah, so let's celebrate with the song Rollin' Man, written and composed by Green, with credits shared by the band's then-manager, C.G. Adams. The song first appeared on the 1968 UK release, Mr. Wonderful, and on the 1969 US release, English Rose. Here's their song, Rollin' Man.
Oh, baby, don't you want a man like me? Oh, baby, don't you want a man like me? I can give you so much loving, more than one woman ever seen. Oh, baby, make some love tonight.
Mark, you may know this already, but Mick Fleetwood still loved the blues, even though, he had great success doing pop music with Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham. he has his little place in Maui.
Yeah.
It's called Fleetwoods, and he has a blues band, and they play there on occasion. And last time I was out in Maui, I couldn't even get tickets to go in to see him. So hopefully next time he's playing. But that's Mick Fleetwood, still his big love.
Hey, let's get Sheila to get us some cheap United tickets. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Okay. I'm all for that. We'll go in January, though.
Okay. Well, you're listening to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, broadcasting on 101.5 FM and streaming 24/7 on the station's website.
And where we play what, Mark?
The greatest music of all time.
I like the fist in the air. I like that. Let's continue with a musician who I photographed in concert many times and appears on the cover of our book, Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today.
And of course, Jim, that would be the great Rory Gallagher. I know, and you can add to this, you've corresponded with his family, and I know they've expressed pride in having Rory on the cover of our book. So tell us a little bit about the man.
Rory was born in Ballyshannon, Ireland in 1948. As a musician, he was not a household name in the U.S., but any musician of substance knew who Rory Gallagher was and spoke of him in the most glorified terms. Who is the journalist? I can't think of the name of it. But anyway, the journalist worked for the music magazine Melody Maker, and he once wrote, "He was one of the hardest working musicians and definitely, in my opinion, and according to this journalist, the best blues player ever."
Yeah, and I can't remember that guy's name either, but we mentioned the magazine.
I guess that's good.
Well, and here's another magazine. Rolling Stone asked Jimi Hendrix what it felt like to be the world's greatest guitarist, and Hendrix reportedly said, "I don't know. Go ask Rory Gallagher." So there. In 1971, Rory was voted Best International Musician by, again, the music magazine Melody Maker, which was one of the Bibles of the time. And he did so by beating out Eric Clapton, so that was no small feat. Rory's trademark guitar was a battered 1961 Fender Stratocaster worn away from his aggressive playing, years of road work, and his own alkaline sweat. In fact, the Fender Guitar Company created a tribute model that resembled his famous weathered instrument.
And Rory was one of Ireland's most beloved and famous rock figures, and to this day, statues and festivals mark his career. On stage, he swaggered and he sweated and he did the, what was the thing?
The duck walk?
The duck walk. Chuck Berry's, he would do the duck walk, which is the cover of our book.
That's
Classic
right.
Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today.
Great plug.
Thank you. So off stage, he was very gentle, down-to-earth guy. So let's capture a bit of that Rory sweat and swagger from his debut album with the band Taste. This is prior to his solo career, obviously. And the album was released in 1960. God, I better drink some water here.
That's right.
1969.
Well, you know, it's all that sweat talking.
The alkaline thing got me going. So here's this song called Catfish. know, when I was younger, we loved Rory Gallagher so much that one of my best friends named his dog Rory.
Good name for a dog.
Yeah. Well, remember that on the test.
Well, next
week.
Time you correspond with the family, let them know.
I'll see if Rory's sure still alive after 40 years.
I'm sure.
50 years. Oh, my God.
They'll have as much pride in that as having Rory on the cover of our book and in the book.
What book is that?
Classic Rock Photographs from Yesterday and Today. All right, Jim, who do we got next? And I think, isn't this our last artist for today?
This is the last one, okay. And one of my favorites. Well, they're all my favorites, gee whiz, you know. Well, before guitar shredding became a thing, there was Alvin Lee with his blazing and nimble guitar playing. But perhaps the greatest moment for Alvin's career came on August 17th, 1969, when 10 years after, took the stage at the original Woodstock Festival. For those who weren't there, the 1970 award-winning documentary made Lee and the band international sensations with their lengthy medley of the song I'm Going Home by Helicopter.
Very good.
That's what he said, remember?
He did.
But in reality, the band regretted this moment as it froze them in time.
Yeah, Alvin Lee was born December 19th, 1944 in Nottingham, England. Early on, he would listen to his father's old 78 RPM records that included prison chain gang songs. But at age 13, he discovered the guitar. By the way, he started out, I think, on clarinet. But at age 13, he discovered the guitar after hearing the great Charlie Christian. He would take his guitar to school and practice at his desk. But not surprisingly, his teacher scolded him and said, "Young man, you'll never make it as a musician." But Alvin's mother knew that nothing could stop her son, and she was right. And he actually got sent home from school because he wore rock and roll gear or apparel to school.
And now you could wear that all the time, and no one says
no
a word.
Big deal. Yeah.
Alvin was ahead of his time. As featured in my photos and those of many others, Alvin's trademark guitar was a heavily stickered red Gibson ES-355 that cost him $90 in the U.S. Talking about inflation, I can imagine what it's worth today. I think it's somebody offered him a hat. Somebody offered a half a mil?
Yeah, half a mil.
Wow.
And that guitar, he nicknamed it Big Red because it was a big red guitar.
It was a big red guitar. Yeah. It had the big peace sign on there, too.
Yeah,
remember
that? Oh, yeah. Stickers all over the place. And there are stories behind where he got the stickers and so forth, but we don't have time for that today.
Okay. We'll do a whole show on stickers on Alvin Lee's guitar.
Sounds good.
And there's so much more to the Alvin Lee story, but we're nearing the end of our show, and Jim Eggers, our producer, is saying, hurry it up.
He's doing that hand thing.
Yeah. Maybe I'll talk slower just to tick him off. What do you think? Oh, there he goes again. So rather than dip into the 10 Years After catalog, we have chosen a song from Alvin's solo career called Ain't Nothing Shaken from his 1970 album, 10 Years Later, Rock of Fuel. So here it is, Ain't Nothing Shaken. Great Alvin Lee, and today's show is over already, where we played some of the greatest guitar players of all time.
Yep. We hope you enjoyed some of the guitarists who made Jim and I sit up and take notice during our mostly teen years.
So thanks for listening, everyone. Join us next time.
Same time, same place, same station.
Same bat channel.
Same wattage.
All right.